Hello, everyone. Welcome to Better Health While Aging, a podcast that gives you strategies and information about improving the health and well-being of older adults. We discuss common health problems that affect people over age 60, the best ways to prevent and manage those problems, and we also often address common concerns and dilemmas that come up with aging parents and other older loved ones, like what to do if you're worried about falls or safety or memory, or even the quality of an older person's healthcare. I'm your host, Dr. Leslie Kernison. I'm a practicing geriatrician, so that means I'm a medical doctor specialized in geriatrics, which is the art and science of modifying healthcare so that it works better for older people and for their families. Today's episode is a special bonus episode featuring a very special guest. It is mid-December, and so soon it'll be that time of year when many of us get together with family to celebrate the holidays. And this is often a joyous time, but it can also be a challenging time for many older adults and many families, especially if there have been any family concerns about an aging parent. So, since I've been particularly focused on helping families over the past year, I decided to invite one of my favorite experts on managing family dynamics and aging issues to help me do a special bonus episode. My guest is Linda Fodrini-Johnson, and she is a licensed family therapist who has been a professional certified care manager since 1984. She is also the founder of Elder Care Services, which was one of our most reputable full-service care agencies in the San Francisco Bay Area for over 30 years. She just recently transitioned it to a new owner, I believe. Linda is also a past president of the National Association for Geriatric Care Managers, which in 2015 was renamed as the Aging Life Care Association. Last but definitely not least, Linda is also one of our wonderful geriatric care managers / aging life care professionals. I never know which term to use these days. But she is one of our wonderful experts who has been providing regular guidance and support to people who are in our Helping Older Parents membership program. We have been so lucky to have her in the membership answering questions in our community forum and also on live Q&A calls with our members, because she just has so much experience to share with families. And she's been also a terrific resource in answering questions about helping aging parents with dementia, because that's a particular area of expertise for her. And in fact, in preparing this episode, I realized that back in 2016, she was also my very first guest on the podcast for episode 3, in which we talked about helping reluctant parents address memory concerns. So when I thought about how can I help families and provide some practical advice to help them make the most of the opportunities and challenges that come up during the holidays, Linda was one of the first people who came to mind. And in fact, we were thinking of covering this topic in a call for our Helping Older Parents membership members. But then it occurred to us that this would be wonderfully useful for the larger Better Health While Aging audience too. So here we are. So I'm just delighted to have Linda here to talk with us about how we can better manage some of the most common challenges that come up with aging parents during the holidays, how we can avoid common pitfalls, and all of this so that we can make the most out of that time that we spend with our family. Linda, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
So before we go into the challenges and your suggestions, I think many in our audience know the term geriatric care manager and aging life care professional, but not everyone does. This is one of the things that we have noticed, actually, when it comes to the membership, is that a lot of members come in and are not quite, either know very little about the kind of work that professionals like you do, or have some misconceptions about what professionals like you can and can't do. So can we start by just having you briefly review that for the audience, just to make sure it's clear to everybody listening?
Sure. A professional geriatric care manager is usually a professional with a background in nursing, social work, counseling, or gerontology. And there are members of the National Association, and I'll get to that in a minute, who have related fields of experience. But when you're unfamiliar and you're looking for a professional geriatric care manager, I usually suggest looking for somebody that has a background in one of those four key professions. And because the profession helps people with all the issues of aging, that professional should also have taken a certification examination or met the standards from the National Association of Social Workers. There's a special expertise that's granted to advanced social workers through that association that's accepted by the Aging Life Care Association. So first of all, that's the background, and a care manager should have probably 5 years experience doing care management before you hire a person. Maybe they've worked under someone else during the years to get that experience before they put out their shingle. And so for the general public to know that the person's a member of the National Association of Geriatric Care Managers, and as you say, it is confusing because they changed the name to Aging Life Care Association, and that's where you would do your research and you put in your zip code, and then you'll get a list of people that have similar backgrounds, but maybe not the background you're looking for. So there is a little bit of vetting that you have to do as a consumer. But if you get somebody with a licensed profession with 5 years experience and they've taken the certification exam, that means they know about the resources, they know about the legal issues in your state and your area, they know about family dynamics, they definitely have expertise in dementia because that's such an issue for the whole aging population. And they know a little bit about prescription medications and drugs. They know a lot about the illnesses that generally older people are dealing with and families. And again, helping families navigate that whole journey from an initial diagnosis or to maybe before a diagnosis to living at home, to moving to assisted living, to help with all those choices. If you think about that geriatric care manager as like a Sherpa or a guide or a coach, they can stay with your family for the entire journey. So it becomes your go-to key person, the hub of the wheel for the aging journey.
Yes, thank you for that summary and that information. I think of geriatric care managers in a way as kind of professional problem solvers when it comes to the issues that come up for older adults and families, mm-hmm. for common age-related life challenges. And, you know, so those common problems start off with, you know, is there a problem here? You know, do we need to do something about this? Or mm-hmm. how can we be proactive in planning ahead for better aging? I mean, I think it's less common for people to reach out to a care manager for that part, but you and your colleagues certainly have the experience and expertise for that. And then I briefly looked into it, but I guess to be certified, as you were saying, there are all these different dimensions, right? Assisting with the family conversations, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And dynamics, practical things in terms of like getting care into the home or considering what are other care and housing options. Mm-hmm. There's the kind of healthcare management, sort of supporting the older person and family in addressing chronic or new health conditions and in interfacing mm-hmm. better with the doctors and the rest of the healthcare system. I guess looking into benefits and ways to pay sometimes.
Right.
And you mentioned that the sort of most common underlying professions are nursing, social work. I think you said family therapy.
Counseling
and gerontology. Mm-hmm. And so I guess people have a degree and experience in that and then need to get extra training and work specifically in that I'm problem solving for older adults and their families kind
exactly.
of role to be certified, right?
Before they can take the test, actually, they have to have that experience.
Right. Yeah. Because obviously not all nurses focus on older adults and families. Not all social workers do, for
no,
that matter.
No.
Not all therapists. And so it's somebody who has that professional background, but has also, you know, done some focused training and on the ground practice and working with
exactly.
adults and families. So, and I've often been surprised at how few people know that geriatric care managers, now known as aging life care professionals, exist. But of course, they are our favorite partners as geriatricians, because we are trained experts in addressing the health issues of older adults, and we're good at incorporating families, and families need often all this additional help that we're not well equipped to do, like advise on exactly how to go about finding the right care in the home or mm-hmm. considering different options. And I would say also that we don't particularly have expertise. You know, I mean, I can do some coaching of how to manage dementia behaviors, but that some professionals have a lot more experience doing it like you.
Mm-hmm. The other thing also is when it comes to entitlements, how you apply for, say, VA benefits and what you need to do before you apply and you're denied, a care manager can help you sort that out. And the same thing when it comes to placement or having to move a parent or a family member, there are rules and regulations that you can get around by knowing your client well, but also making sure that the physician fills out the paperwork correctly. Because if the physician, for instance, put Alzheimer's dementia as the number one diagnosis in the state of California, that person would have to go into a locked facility because it's assumed they're going to wander. Where a care manager that knows a client very well and knows that the client maybe has mild cognitive impairment, patterns very well, never has been a behavioral problem, will do fine in assisted living with a good support system, could be redirected very easily. Some other people couldn't. So for the families to have that expertise on, again, knowing the client well enough to make a good, to give good advice on different options. And then also that next step is filling out the paperwork so you don't get denied what everyone thinks is the best solution for that family member. So it's a lot of that stuff.
Yeah, a lot of knowing the inside game.
Exactly.
Now, in today's episode, we're going to focus on one of your many areas of expertise, but it's especially helping with just some of the family dynamics and issues that come up when families have had some concerns about an aging parent. So before we go into those challenges, can you just say a few words about your own particular background and how you came to be doing this kind of work?
Ah, well, I saw my own parents struggle with my dad's mom and dad and my mother's mother all at the same time as having three teenagers. And I was young, married and out of the home, starting a family of my own. But as I watched my parents struggle, I knew I wanted to go back to school and do something that would help families have a better experience being caring, loving adult children and not, you know, having to throw the baby out with the bathwater, you know, seeing that my teenage brothers were a handful at the time and they were just going crazy. I saw that their marriage was really stressed and I said, there's got to be a better way. So when I went back to school, I knew I wanted to do something. I thought it would be social work until I discovered during my internship that there was a profession called professional geriatric care manager. And I knew that's what I wanted to do. And that was in the early 80s. So that's what propelled me in this direction. And concurrently, I just happened to my very first job as a care manager. My co-care manager had started a Alzheimer respite program when no one could even pronounce the word Alzheimer's. They were saying old-timers disease. At that point, she said she couldn't do it. Did I want to? So I was the director of the very first Alzheimer respite program, probably in the San Francisco Bay Area, that was a social day program. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much, much more than my class learning or book learning, working with those families in those early years. And that's been a passion of mine. So that's where I began and worked for a couple of nonprofits. And they were wonderful organizations, but not very creative. And then I decided to put out my shingle and become a care manager, helping families navigate all the dilemmas and the joys also of being a family caregiver.
Right, right. And then your own degree is in family therapy.
Yeah, my degree is clinical psychology, and then I'm licensed as a family therapist. And that was because I felt as I went through my undergraduate degree is in social work, but I thought that the family dynamics would be the most serious kind of issue to deal with, and then connecting people to resources and helping them make choices would come secondary after you address the emotional and behavioral issues that this kind of caring presents to a family.
Well, that's so interesting. So now that it's, 35 years later or whatever it is,
Yeah.
do you still feel like the relationship dynamics are where it starts?
Well, yes, I do. And people don't come to us until there's a crisis. And some very wonderful, healthy families that are just loving and caring, they don't have a problem in their relationships, but they definitely have a problem in choosing options and what do we do now that we have this diagnosis, or what kind of a diagnosis should we seek? You must see that, Leslie, in medicine. People come to you for one thing, but that's just a symptom of something bigger that needs to be addressed.
For sure.
And it happens in families as well. So
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's been a great background for my career. And my colleagues, interesting that you asked that don't have as much psychology and family dynamic education, say that they feel that that's what was missing in their education to work in this field. So,
Well, I certainly feel like often it's, important to address those dynamics in order to pursue the evaluation or the solutions.
Yes,
that we're trying to do, which is why I've been so glad that you have been able to be part of the membership. So let's now talk about these things that come up. So what, would you say are some of the more common challenges that tend to come up at this time of year when families who have aging parents that they have perhaps been concerned about when people come together for the holidays?
Yeah, number one, when people come together for the holidays, especially if they live a distance, they might not have been as aware of some changes that are going on in their aging family member. And when they see them, they could be a little bit startled and start the "you should, you need to" with their parent, not preparing for, they haven't been prepared for what they're going to see. So that can be a problem. And for those of you that have heard me on some of the other talks or seen anything that I've written before, know that we really don't want to ever use shoulds with our aging family members. We want to say, "I'm concerned about." And so it's the approach. I think that one of the things that families, if we want to call a pitfall around the holidays, is they're surprised by what they see. Mom's lost weight, dad's falling, mom's drinking more, the home isn't kept like it was kept before. There's just surprises, and you address them too quickly. Mm-hmm. Instead of just coming and connecting the love, the hug, whatever's been your tradition, just to kind of stay with that as you first get together. And that's kind of, I guess, advice for people that haven't seen their family member just yesterday or last week. Mm-hmm. It's a little different than when you're seeing mom and dad every week, and now your brother and sister have flown into town, and you want to have a family meeting because everybody's there for Christmas, and you want to talk about the what ifs of the future. And mom and dad just want to have a normal, happy holiday, whether it's Christmas or Hanukkah or New Year's Eve or whatever that holiday celebration is going to be. They want it to be like the traditional one that they've had in previous years.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of older adults don't want to face the reality of their age and mm-hmm. that they might become frail if they're not already frail. And the adult children are looking at the number attached to their parents' age and going, 88, oh my God. Even though mom is very capable, they want a plan. They want to know, maybe they're the kind of people that are always having plans for everything.
Right.
And they want to know what to do, how to do it, where to find all the answers to all those issues. Like a lot of older adults don't share their finances with their adult children.
Right.
I can't tell you the number of family meetings when I'll say, "Well, what's mom or dad's income?" "Oh, we don't know."
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
"What kind of resources do they have?" "Well, we have no idea."
Yeah.
And it's like, I can't really give you a lot of suggestions until we know how it's going to be paid for, unless you're coming here willing to pay whatever to help your parent.
So we've already mentioned you know, maybe I can recap what we've mentioned, then we can dig into a few of them more.
Sure.
But it sounds like, you know, some of the common challenges that come up, you know, one scenario is adult children coming home for the holidays and they haven't seen their parents for a while and, you know, just are surprised by the situation, surprised and alarmed, it sounds like.
Yes.
And, you know, and the tendency is often to like jump in and start trying to fix things, in part by telling your aging parents all these things they should do.
Right.
And so you're sort of speaking to the fact that it's, you know, even though that's the common tendency and understandable, it's, you know, one, we want to think about being diplomatic about how we voice our concerns.
Exactly.
To say I'm concerned rather than you should, but you want to focus on connecting and maybe also just on like observing for now what you're noticing, and there'll be time to process it and figure out what to do about it a little bit later. So that was one like scenario that you mentioned. And then you mentioned another one, which I think of coming in two variations. And of course, you know, so far we haven't mentioned anything about holidays with parents who have dementia. And maybe we can come to that a little later in the episode, because I know that's an area of your special expertise. But you were sort of talking about adult children wanting to get right into planning for the future or addressing something. It sounds like, you know, sometimes that's that their parent has an advanced age and they just think some of this should be dealt with, but that there are also other families who have already been involved in supporting an aging parent. Right?
Exactly. Yes.
And maybe the adult child who, one person I know, Janet Benvenuti, you know, refers to them as like the designated child, right? You know that?
Yeah, yes.
That there's often like the designated child who has been dealing with things, right? And so when the siblings come, that designated child wants to like take advantage of that time to get the family to help with things. So maybe we can talk about each of those in a little bit more detail. I guess first, you know, so how can adult children even know whether, or how common do you think it is that adult children get all worried because their parent is advanced in age, but it's actually really not at all suitable to be bringing it up at the holiday time?
Oh, I think the majority, if you have a parent probably over the age of 80, you're talking about it or hearing about it in your social life, in your work life, you're hearing it from colleagues that other people are dealing with this too. So I think it's very, very common to talk about the age of your parent. And you might say that, you know, dad swims every day, he bikes 50 miles a week, mom plays tennis, and they're in their 80s. But we all know the reality of life is it does come to an end. So the adult child, that 60-year-old, or 55-year-old that has a important position in the career, they know that phone can ring at any time and life will change for everybody. So I think it's more common than we might hear about it, but you know, you could do a little bit of a social survey in all of our conversations. It just comes up that, you know, and mom and dad have not done, and this is what you'll hear, and mom and dad haven't done any planning, and if they have, they haven't shared it with us.
Right, that's what you were alluding to, that, you know, then when there is something going on and you ask them, what is the financial situation, they don't. So it sounds like on one hand, it's understandable and even, you know, to a certain extent, good.
Right.
Families are thinking about this and thinking,
exactly,
have this on their radar of like, we should address, you know, not just, I mean, I think when we say planning, people think, you know, we're going to have all these like this paperwork done and this stuff.
Right.
Done. But as you and I know, it starts with conversations.
It does. Yes.
To better understand like how everybody's, you know, preferences and values and, you know, what they're already thinking about. Right.
Right.
And what they would prefer. So it is starting with those, you know, conversations and, you know, thinking, do I know enough about what my aging parent is thinking or wants or might prefer?
I guess there's a couple of approaches, Leslie. One is if there's already a designated child that's the it person, and that child is overwhelmed, that adult child might say to the siblings who are coming into town for this holiday or special event, it could be even a parent's birthday, they're coming into town for this, that let's have a phone conversation. Let's have a conference call and talk about mom and dad or needs and my needs as a designated child, where I need help, and just be frank. Sometimes families can do that and really come together with each person taking a different role.
Now, you said have a phone call, but family are coming into town. So you mean a phone call before everybody comes in? So basically try to address that before everyone's there.
What the issues are and what we'd like to accomplish. Maybe you want to accomplish four things and maybe you only accomplish one. Mm-hmm. But you want to have whatever the holiday is, you want to have that celebration as traditional as possible. And the conversation either the day after — I wouldn't do it the day before — the day after. You don't want to do it when you're drinking alcohol, mm-hmm, or, you know, having a big meal and there's a lot to do and there's children and presents and, you know, candle lighting or whatever is happening. You don't want it to happen then, but the next day. And then the approach would be, you know, mom and dad, you guys are doing so great. This is the healthy parents, right? Mm-hmm. But we want to know what your plans are if one of you breaks a hip or, God forbid, has a stroke. What would happen? Tell us. And so we know how to get the help you want if it falls onto us. You know, if you do that kind of casually and not too intense, I think it will come up. And if it doesn't, you started the thought process with your parent. Mm-hmm. You can come back to it again in even a couple of weeks. But don't get overly concerned with, we've got to get a copy of their trust, we need to know where their bank accounts are. You know, just go slow with that. Mm-hmm, unless your parents are saying, oh, we wanted to share that with you kids for a long time. Well, let me get my booklet out and show you where we keep our information. You'd be surprised. It's just the conversation just hasn't happened. Maybe there hasn't been an opening for it.
Yeah, and I want to just like highlight something you said, because I think it's so, so important, which is that even if nothing seems to happen, you know, that it's still like often getting things rolling in people's minds. Because I feel like I hear that a lot, like they didn't want to talk about it, nothing happened. Mm-hmm. And I mean, sometimes I think just because of the way it was brought up, you know, it may have created a lot of resistance, but I think it's actually to be expected that these are weighty things that people often need some time to think over. And that part, you know, what's most common is that it takes, you know, a few tries. You kind of have to cycle back to it.
Right, exactly.
A few times, and that, you know, things often are slowly moving forward, even though it may not be super obvious, and that it's really not realistic to expect to sit down, open this conversation, and have tons of things arranged or sorted out by the end of the hour and a half. That's really, I mean, when that happens, there have often been like previous conversations that have been laying some of that foundation.
It could be. I mean, I think if you do it not with intensity, you're going to have more success. Of course, if your parent is very frail and they've had multiple hospitalizations and you still don't know who has power of attorney for healthcare, and you're an adult child, and you haven't been called by a hospital social worker to get that document done, there might be a little bit more intensity or urgency, I guess, to have a little bit more information. And again, the holiday might not be the perfect time to bring it up, depending on your timing. And again, I suggest the day after the holiday to say, there's some things we want to talk about, mom or dad, and we'll do that tomorrow. You know, you know, you could prepare them.
Yeah, or that we want to ask you about.
Yeah, we just want to know what you guys want if things go south. You know, if you hit a pothole of life, you know, what are your values? What's important to you? We want to make sure when somebody asks us, we know what you want.
Yeah, or what you'd prefer. Because I feel like people often tell me, well, I asked them what they wanted and they didn't answer, or they said they didn't know. What's your kind of, how do we help people get past that? Because I do hear that a lot. And I think I understand, because I think often, if we do ask people, what do you want? Initially, they're like, I want to stay well and independent in my house, until the day I die. Right?
Exactly. And that's...
Get a little bit beyond that.
And that's when I meet with somebody like that. I just met with a couple that had no children. I call them the orphan elders. Mm-hmm. And we talked about, well, if you can't live here anymore, what kind of setting would you like? What's important to you? Do you want a garden? Do you want to have pets? Do you not like pets? Do you like socialization? So to get that conversation going and get, even if I get yes or no's, then I'm building up a plan, actually, without even sharing it with them, about what they're going to need to do. This couple that I was talking to that had no adult children, I had to help them find a private fiduciary and a geriatric care manager who would bring in the private fiduciary, get the elder law attorney, and help this older couple. He obviously had had some strokes. He had been her caregiver, and they were really, really in a desperate situation. We're talking about adult children. At least there's family members willing to oversee and orchestrate some sort of care plan for their parent when things do go south, like what happens for many individuals. Most of us just don't die in our sleep. You hear a couple of stories like that probably a year. There's usually some medical incident that happens. Sometimes it's a chronic issue that exacerbates itself, and there's another issue that falls upon that issue, so it becomes a medical triple deck sandwich.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I think that, brings up another sort of thing, is that these conversations about what would you prefer, again, take often several cycles, and then often people have different ideas or more specific ideas after they have gone through a crisis or an emergency, right? Because it feels theoretical in a way until then.
I met with one daughter some time back, and she told me about her mom living in this beautiful Victorian in the Napa Valley. It sounded ideal. The mother was actually born in that home, and she said, "I'm not leaving here." And the daughter and I kind of practiced some scripts that she could use with her mom. And she did. She told her mom that, "Mom, you've been independent. You've made good choices, but I don't want to make a choice. If you fall and break your hip, I don't want to choose a nursing home for you. So I want you to go look at a couple of places." Well, the mother had never, ever seen even assisted living. Mm. So she took her to see, and the mother agreed to look and said, "I'm never moving to one of those places. I'm living in my own home till the end of my life." And the daughter knew her mom was struggling to live in this big home. And about 6 months later, the daughter called me and she said, "Linda, you won't believe this, but my mother called me and said, you know that place, I'm just going to make up a name, Happy Valley Hills. Mm-hmm. Well, I think I want to move there." Mm. So it percolated for her on how hard it was to manage that home and how easy it would be in that lovely garden view of probably a vineyard up in the Napa Valley that the daughter showed her. And she made the move. But it took her 6 months to think about it.
Yeah. People often need some time. Yeah.
And the daughter had thought that she failed in that conversation, even though she took her mother to see these places that her mother said she hated. She chose one of them.
Well, great. Well, so to kind of like recap, it sounds like it is important to have these conversations with aging parents, and that if siblings are coming together and that's going to be a time to have everyone in the same room, because there is something to be said for people being able to see each other, then definitely doing it, after the main holiday event is going to be better. Framing it as, wanting to understand their preferences and values, if something should happen, and realizing that, people will often need some time to think about it. And just if, nothing gets said or decided right then doesn't mean that it was a failure. Now, you know, the flip side is that sometimes I hear from older adults themselves that they feel like their kids are like hounding them or hassling them. So Do you have any suggestions for those older adults who, you know, what they can or, you know, might say to their families if they want to enjoy their holiday, or, you know, what are some more constructive approaches?
Yeah, it's interesting you ask that, because I've been teaching a lot of classes lately about two older adults, about aging with eyes wide open, being alert to what this longer life might present to us, and making some decisions before an issue arises in their life. So I'm talking to that group too a lot more recently. And that does come up. But my kids are bugging me to move to retirement living. And I usually ask why. You know, do you want to? Do you need to? Is your house conducive for you to age in place in it? Do you need to do something to your house to make your children think it is safe for you? Do you need some add some technology to your house that, you know, you're not on the floor overnight if you fall and break a hip, if you live alone? You know, your children are worried about you. That's why they're asking you to, you know, make some changes. So I usually encourage them to have a family meeting, to call a family meeting, and let the older adult call the meeting, and maybe bring in an expert, bring in a care manager that could advocate for you on that you are able to take care of yourself, or maybe that you need to think about assisted living, or maybe even continuing care where you have all three levels of care. A lot of adult children like to know that their parents are going to be in one place. And sometimes the older adults, the parents that called me in to have a meeting with their children, didn't realize all the options that were available to them. And again, it's just another opportunity for them to express what their wishes are, who's going to make decisions for them, who's that person that holds the power. If it's one of the adult children, does that adult child really know that you don't want wrinkled sheets, or that you want a place where you could bring Fluffy, you know, or a place to garden? Some clients, a client of mine, she had dementia, and he was a primary caregiver in their 90s, mind you. And this guy plays tennis and he swims every single day. Oh, and he's 93. And he placed his wife, and he said he was never going to move, placed his wife in a small care home. And he found a assisted living with the help of a care manager that had a swimming pool, and he still drives himself to play tennis. So his life, things that are important in his life are still there, but he's calling the shots. He made the decisions to do that with the support of his family and some advice of a professional.
Right, right. So it sounds like, you know, to come back to, for older adults who feel like my kids are bugging me, you know, it sounds like, first of all, I imagine we would say to older adults, if you don't want to be, you know, you can tell them you don't want to be discussing this during the holidays,
right,
but to recognize that it is legitimate and understandable that they could envision a time when you, their aging parent, might need help. None of us like to think about that, but realistically looking around, everybody has a good chance of needing help. Some people will be lucky enough to not need it.
Right.
And what do you propose for how you're going to, I guess, create a backup plan, or, you know, assess what's going on and let your family know?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody should feel pestered, but if you're refusing to ever discuss it or consider it, you're leaving them without, you know, the understanding of what you might prefer. And that it also sounds like, you know, I know that I would say this to everybody, and I imagine you would too, but, you know, everybody should eventually make some kind of plan.
Yes.
For their future, and that, as you were saying, that allows you to stay more in control of the process, right?
Right.
Because if you don't, there's still a good chance that something will happen, and then other people will be making decisions for you, and you may or may not be able to be as involved as if you had been proactive before.
Exactly. And it's so important to have those wishes articulated in your legal documents too, and that everybody knows where to find those legal documents, and everybody knows who's in charge you know, who will be orchestrating the care needs for that parent, the mom, the dad, or both of them.
Yeah. Also thinking about something else that, you know, you mentioned, and just that this is the, you know, the flip side of often, you know, often we're advising adult children worried about their aging parents. And, you know, one of the things that I find myself saying over and over again, I've heard you say that too, is that, you know, we need to start by thinking, learning more about how the older parent sees it. Mm-hmm. But that the flip side here is if you're an older person being pressured by your kids or bugged by them, how are they seeing it? You know, what exactly is leading them to be concerned? Mm-hmm. And, you know, how can you address that or renegotiate that, right? They may have misconceptions about your health, you know, perhaps because they haven't been very in the loop. Mm-hmm. Or maybe there actually is, you know, something that's worth acknowledging and making a plan to look into.
Exactly. And at the same time, when I've been involved with, I'm thinking of a mother-daughter, only child, a daughter that very busy professional, mom lived in a retirement community. She had macular degeneration, so her vision was poor. She lived in a community that had great transportation that she navigated quite successfully. She did live alone, but when I went to visit her, her house was immaculate. She was dressed like she was ready for a photo shoot. She looked absolutely wonderful. Mm-hmm. And she was really socially engaged with lots of activities. And the only suggestion I made was an emergency response system, which I said, it would make your daughter feel better if you would accept something like that. And maybe a visit from me once every 3 months, just to tell your daughter that you're mentally competent and you're physically well enough to take care of yourself. And then she wouldn't worry about you so often. And that was all that was necessary to keep her in her own home for, I think she lived there another 5 years before she had a medical incident. But the daughter was, you know, seeing her mother as an 80 some odd year old and just thought her mother should make a move then. And the mom was very, very happy with her lifestyle. And it was very much a very healthy lifestyle, despite her visual challenges.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like it was an instance where just getting in an objective third party.
Exactly.
Is what was really helpful to the adult daughter.
Yeah.
Well, now I would love for us to spend a few minutes talking about something else that I know comes up a lot, which are sibling conflicts, right?
Yes.
So, you know, some people are the only child of aging parents, but also, you know, there are often several siblings involved, and that can create all kinds of issues. It's certainly come up in the membership at times. And, you know, we have conflicts over who's been doing what or should be doing what.
Right.
Or there's the designated child who's been there doing a lot of work, helping the aging parent and overseeing the care. And then everyone else comes in from out of town. And I know we often hear from those designated children that they feel that when everybody comes in from out of town for a holiday or event, they do nothing but complain or tell the designated child what they should be doing.
Yes.
So yes. I know that's another common set of issues that comes up. And then there's just, you know, people having different disagreements about what mom and dad need. So can you maybe talk a little bit about some practical suggestions for our listeners on, you know, navigating these sibling challenges during the holidays?
You know, number one, if there's always been a disagreement every single holiday when everybody gets together, you might want to give your parent a gift and not have those disagreements rear their ugly head during the family holiday celebration. Again, could you have a conference call prior and talk about what the issues are with mom and dad and designated child? Sometimes you are the person that has the most burden. You have to set some boundaries of what you can and cannot do. And a lot of designated children are the good child. You know, they've always been, I used to call myself Cinderella. I had three younger brothers and I always did everything my parents said I should do. I mean, I was the good one. They were acting out all the time and it really didn't give me any opportunity to act out. I just happen to play my role really well. And usually that designated child in a larger family is that same child that brought mom the Kleenex when her nose was running, or jumped up and got a blanket for anyone in the family that wasn't feeling well and napping. You know, it's that person that just loves to care, and there's nothing wrong with that. But when it comes to taking care of an aging family member that's very needy and needs maybe daily care or even 3 times a week visits, and somebody's preparing meals and taking them to medical appointments, that adult child really needs to say, I'm burdened. I can't do this anymore. I need some help. And to have that meeting, to just try to be as honest as you can and forget all the sibling rivalry that happened when you were children, you know, that your brother got to go to a better college and parents didn't have enough money to send you to the same kind of college. I don't know what went on, but something goes on in family systems that seems to play out as we become adults. And then when it comes to parent care, it rears its ugly head again, and no one even knows where that anger is coming from, or that criticism, that overcritical sibling that's flying in from, you know, they live in Europe and they see mom twice a year or dad twice a year, and they like to tell you what to do and what not to do, or thinking that dad is just fine, he can drive, and you know, he's, you know, nicked the car several times and had it repaired as quickly as it's gotten into a fender bender, and he shouldn't be driving, but they want dad to drive. So again, they don't want to, that other child doesn't want to see their parent is failing for whatever reason, you know, they could be that they want to see their parent have autonomy, but you don't want autonomy versus an unsafe situation. So, and especially in the early stages of dementia, you know, some people are so socially appropriate. When that adult son or daughter flies in that they haven't seen very often, they just seem to shine and seem just perfect. And it's just so frustrating to that designated child that's saying, oh my God, you're getting Saint Mom, and I don't get that. I never get a thank you, and she thanks you for, you know, coming and appreciate you so much for flying all the way here to just to see her for this holiday, and on, and she never ever gives me any credit for anything I do. Well,
and that's fairly common too. Well, so it sounds like, to kind of summarize your key suggestions, it sounds like, first of all, you know, it can be a gift to your aging parents to minimize the sibling squabbles. And so, you know, one way to do that can be to be very intentional about having a call before, you know, and maybe really setting up a plan to address things afterwards.
Yes.
Or without exposing the aging parents to too much conflict. It sounds like if, you know, you're the designated child who's been doing a lot, to, you know, think about speaking up and asking for help more constructively. And it sounds like also for siblings who are coming in from out of town, that it can be good to just give your caregiving sibling the benefit of the doubt, if at all possible, because they are the ones who are there and I think often do know more. I mean, I think, you know, I'm sure you've seen situations where they were actually like mismanaging, I guess, to a certain extent, the situation, or maybe too close to see what was needed. But often they almost always are putting in a lot of time and effort.
Right.
And that what they need most of all from their siblings is, you know, not ideas on what else to do, but, you know, some support.
Yeah.
And then again, it sounds like if there are disagreements, during the holidays may not be the time to do it, but at some point thinking about, would it be helpful to bring in a, you know, again, a professional, objective third party to help resolve the question of whether the caregiving sibling is actually on track or not, and even to mediate some conversations. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay. So now with our last, just for maybe like 5 minutes, and then we should wrap up the episode. Parents with dementia and memory problems. Can we talk a little bit about that? Because I know people often want to have the usual fun holiday, but also people with dementia have just can find it harder to have big gatherings or changes to routine. So can you give some suggestions on how to sort of avoid pitfalls and make the most out of the holidays for those people who have a parent who has a diagnosis of Alzheimer's or a similar dementia?
Yeah, definitely you want to take as much of the anxiety out of the holiday celebration as you can, because that definitely overwhelms most people with dementia. Obviously, everybody is different, and some people just always love a party. You know, you do have the party social people with dementia, as well as the majority of people with dementia. Too much commotion causes anxiety and unrest and increases their confusion. Mm-hmm. So one of the suggestions I've made for my families over the many years I've been working with families with someone with dementia is to pick mom or dad up just before you're going to serve dinner. So they're not in the house the whole time that there's chaos and preparation. If in fact they tend to be anxious and get overwhelmed, again, you want to make it them to be part of the family celebration. So the dinner or the meal is the most calm time, I would say, that, you know, you're celebrating with foods that are familiar with to them and hopefully foods that they can eat. I got to watch that sodium. But again, that you planned the meal for mom or dad. Maybe you don't have alcohol. That usually isn't something that's suggested for people with dementia, that you celebrate with a sparkling apple cider or something that everybody can toast to that holiday and still feel festive. And then right after dessert, mom and dad is taken back to their home. Mm-hmm. So they're only in the celebration for a shorter period of time. It's not like it's a whole afternoon or a whole day. Mm-hmm. And gift giving could be minimal, you know, just maybe a few gifts exchanged. Again, that becomes overwhelming. Who gave me this? Where's it from? What am I going to do with it? I can't use this. You don't want all that. You don't want to overwhelm people. And many of the older adults that, again, I've worked with feel bad because they have nothing to give in return. So did somebody, sometimes a grandchild or something, could help that older person with either shopping through a magazine or online with a grandparent and pick out little things for people if that's important to them. If it's always been important to them, help them do that. Mm-hmm. I know for my mother, it was giving checks, and then she would forget who she wrote checks to. I remember one year that three of the four grandchildren or children got checks. One didn't. It wasn't because she wanted to not give that person. It's just she forgot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just forgot.
It sounds like thinking about just keeping things simpler.
Simple.
And shorter, and trying to maintain their usual routine.
Yes.
As much as possible. So it sounds like if it's at all possible, not having the whole party hosted in the person with dementia's home, mm-hmm. right?
Oh,
I think sometimes people think, oh, well, we don't want them to have to travel or to move or to drive them somewhere, but that actually having a gathering and preparing a party usually involves a lot of people and changes to routine. Mm-hmm. Which are hard for many people with dementia. So if the person with dementia lives in a special residence or facility, then you mm-hmm. can, you know, as you were saying, pick them up right before the dinner and take them back mm-hmm. afterwards. But if they're living at home or with somebody, it would be better to not have the whole holiday party there, but instead host it at someone else's home. That way the person with dementia can have their usual routine for as much as possible during the holidays. And then you bring them for a sort of shorter period of time to join the family and try to keep things simple and not too long, because we don't want them to get overtired.
Exactly. And agitated, usually.
Yeah. And I think that's good, because I think often people sort of think, oh, well, we don't want them to travel or move, so we'll bring the party to them. But that actually, that's well-intentioned, but can end up being quite stressful.
It can be. You know, grocery stores and supermarkets offer these package meals where you don't have to, you know, the turkey, the ham or whatever, the leg of lamb, it's already cooked. You pick it up and you could bring it to their home. But if you're going to do that, make it again a shorter period of time. Somebody might just not want to go out, but they still want their traditional holiday foods. So you could do it that way. Again, making it shorter and simpler for people with dementia. Yes.
And since you mentioned sodium, I will just say that I feel like if there are any thoughts about that, asking the providers how important it is for them to minimize sodium, just because not everyone with dementia is extremely sensitive to it, depends on their other health conditions. Mm-hmm. And that in later life, daily pleasures are really important, and eating food that tastes good is so important. Mm-hmm. So I always sort of encourage families to talk to the health providers about what is really necessary in terms of changing the diet and how big an impact it will have on their short-term health, like today and over the next few months. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes it does make a big difference. And in other cases, it's, you know, the time for prevention over the 5-year term is over. And we do want people to enjoy their food.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on, you know, I know for some families, their parent seems to be having memory changes, but has not been diagnosed. Any suggestions for families who encounter that?
Well, again, you don't want to confront it the day of the holiday, mm-hmm. but the next day, especially if you're all on the same page and say, oh my God, mom forgot to, you know, maybe mom was hosting the meal and forgot some important pieces, and you're all seeing that dementia is definitely something that's presenting itself. You say the next day to mom, hey mom, we understand or whatever terminology you want to use, that sometimes you have a problem with memory, and there are new medications out there that can help with your memory. You know, there are nothing that's going to really stop Alzheimer's dementia.
Well, I usually say it's important to talk to the health providers about it, mm-hmm. because there are, you know, a variety of common health conditions that can make memory and thinking worse. And let's go get mm-hmm. checked for those, is usually what I say. But I think, you know, as you were saying, not confronting them about it and being careful about, you know, reminding them or trying to correct mm-hmm. any misconceptions they have. That's generally not helpful. And I mean, I'd be interested in what your, you know, usual advice is, Linda. But I know for me, I tell people if they've noticed something and are worried to focus mostly on just observing, mm-hmm. you know, and maybe asking a few questions like, oh, you know, I noticed you forgot that or that. Have you noticed any changes, like, mm-hmm. you know, with your memory? And just see what they say. And an awful lot of them will say no.
Yes.
Or be defensive about it.
Yeah.
Because often people are either unaware or they are kind of aware and they're quite frightened and quite defensive. But I tend to encourage people to really take a kind of like, let me just observe and gently try to figure out what they have noticed for themselves.
Exactly.
And how they're framing it, and that it's not the time to try to get them to understand that they're forgetful, or get them to understand that they've been doing this or that wrong, or get them to understand that they have to get it even evaluated. It's just observing whatever you are noticing. And the more specific you are, the more helpful it is to us as professionals. Mm-hmm. And actually, we'll link to that in the show notes. The common causes of cognitive impairment, of memory and thinking problems, and the 10 mm-hmm. things doctors should check.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So we'll put that, but, you know, I just say, you know, start gathering the information, but don't try to make them understand or believe or change anything.
And a lot of adult children are so in reality that they feel like they have to correct misinformation. Mm-hmm. The date is wrong, or they mm-hmm. call a grandchild by the wrong name. If you're constantly correcting, that person is not going to feel very good about the visit or themselves.
Yeah.
So if it's not really important, if it's like, you know, a red light needs to be stopped at, that's important. That's dangerous. But anything that's not dangerous, not to correct.
Right. Yes, that's so true. And such a good point. And just saying, don't you remember?
Yeah.
You know, either, no, they don't. It's not going to help them remember. It is just going to leave them feeling embarrassed. And, you know, which also brings up this other thing that I think people often don't know, but that as when people are developing memory problems, they will forget what exactly happened, but they won't forget the feeling.
Yes.
So when you are telling people, don't you remember, no, they won't remember. And they may not even remember that you asked them, don't you remember, but they will feel often embarrassed. and that feeling of embarrassment or discomfort, you know, will persist. And they won't even be able to tell you or remember why they're feeling embarrassed.
And that is why people refuse invitations, because remember, they were embarrassed the last time they went in that setting. So if you want mom or dad to continue to be part of the family, again, try not to do that. It's really hard when you've had a different relationship for 50 or 60 years with this person, that now you're going to interact with their conversation differently. And you have to, for their dignity and to respect them. So it's, it's really important. One of the things we didn't talk about, Leslie, is when you can't visit your parent for a holiday, what do you do? And a friend of mine who's also a geriatric care manager, she has a blog, I guess, that she wrote. And I thought it was really some good ideas for send non-tech traditional things like cards, older people that are alone and at a distance, buy them a really pretty card for that holiday. They love them. Calls, old-fashioned phone calls, cookies, or maybe some holiday food that you can mail that would have been traditional in that person's holiday celebration, send them that. I thought those were great ideas. And the other idea she had for these families is there's a app called Lots of Helping Hands. I don't know if you've heard of it. Create a circle of care. Start that, you know, because you can't get there, get the friends or neighbors or church people that can be a helping hand for that family member. Go grocery shopping for them. When they run out of something, somebody they could call. I thought that was a great idea.
No, I love all those ideas. I guess the one more that I would throw in, I know this has been nice for my family, is calendars with family pictures. Make a very nice gift, because everybody loves seeing pictures of family, right?
Great idea. And my friend also had a technology idea that I thought was a good idea. And that is a device that locates those lost glasses, keys, or...
Do you have a particular one to recommend? It sounds convenient, but I don't know. I'll have to look into what she recommends and see.
It's called Esky, E-S-K-Y, Wireless Locator. And I looked it up, and it's only $26 on Amazon. So it's a pretty inexpensive gift that would be very handy for many of us, not just our aging family members.
Right.
I think I'm going to put it on my list.
On your wish list for Santa. All right. Well, speaking of gifts, we've had a member or two ask if it's possible to gift membership in the Helping Older Parents program, and we are looking into how to arrange the logistics of that. But otherwise, if you are struggling to help an aging parent or know somebody who is thinking about, you know, what would be helpful to them, and that can be, again, setting up lots of helping hands or helping them just find a little bit of time off. So yeah, Linda, in closing, any last, you know, tips or suggestions that you have for people listening on better holidays with aging parents and avoiding common pitfalls?
There was another little resource, and it was grandkid questions, 100 questions that grandchildren could ask their grandparent. I thought that that was a great list, and it's on the homecareassistance.com website. You probably would just have to Google 100 questions.
Yeah, we can find it and post a link to it.
Yeah. And like, what was your first home like? What was the first movie you remember seeing? What was your first date like? Again, this is, you're asking people that have better memories these questions, but you can even try a few questions with people with dementia.
They often remember things from long ago much better than recent ones, right? People are often so surprised by that. That's actually to be expected. So so it's nice to think that those questions could still even be asked, you know, even with an older parent or grandparent who's becoming a bit forgetful.
Yes. I thought that was a good idea. But, you know, I think last tips about enjoying the holidays, to think about what are the holidays really about. They're about usually family and tradition, and you just try to keep a little of that without being overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. You know, simplify, I guess.
Yeah.
Connection.
Simplify, yeah. Focus on connection.
Yes. Yeah. And not try to get too much done.
Mm-hmm.
All these things. I know it's a time when everybody's together and you can talk about it, but make sure you have that peaceful holiday time to connect before you jump into making some plans about the tomorrows that mm-hmm. we don't have any idea will come, you know.
Right. Right. Yeah. Planning is important, but can be often put off until after the holidays.
Yes.
So connecting.
Yeah.
And getting to know people mm-hmm. is what is most important. And keeping things simpler mm-hmm. is often mm-hmm. a good idea, because it just creates more space for that connection, you know, no matter what the state of people's health or minds.
I have some families that have eliminated gift giving.
Mm.
They've told that to the older parent. They might give gifts, but they don't do it during that holiday time mm-hmm. because that's overwhelming for mm-hmm. me.
Yeah. So another suggestion that might be especially good for families where there's a parent with dementia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great. Great. Well, Linda, thank you so much. As always, it's just such a treat to benefit from all your years of experience and of expertise. So really appreciate you helping me create this bonus episode, which hopefully will be helpful to lots of families so that they can get, you know, more connection out of the holidays and less stress and conflict.
Yeah. We'll have a peaceful holiday, all of you.
Thank you. And with that, I'm going to wrap up this episode of Better Health While Aging. If you have any questions about something you heard in this episode, you can post it on the show notes page for the episode. I'll also be posting some links to some of the resources that I mentioned in the episode. To find the show notes, visit betterhealthwhileaging.net and click podcast in the main menu at the top. Last but not least, if you've been enjoying the podcast, don't forget to support us by subscribing on iTunes. And if you've already done that, please leave a rating and review. This makes it easier for others to discover our show in iTunes, and I would love for the many people who are interested in health or aging or family caregivers to be able to find it and give it a chance. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Dr. Leslie Kernison, and I'm looking forward to you joining us for future episodes.